We live in a complicated world. We do what we can for ourselves, but so much of what affects our families, jobs, and communities is seemingly outside of our control, or maybe more to the point, under the control of politicians and bureaucrats. Today's guest is uniquely qualified to talk about governance, the economy, national security, and a host of other big picture issues that we should all probably be better informed about. Matt Mayer of Opportunity Ohio joins us today on Town Hall Ohio.
This is Town Hall Ohio, home to interesting people, engaging issues, and enlightening stories. Town Hall Ohio is a production of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, working to forge a partnership between farmers and consumers, and is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now, here's Town Hall Ohio host, Joe Corneli.
In the opening of one of his books, Matt Mayer writes proudly that he is descended from immigrant farmers, so he can't be all bad. Today, Matt is a widely recognized thought leader on a multitude of subjects. His credentials include associations with the Heritage Foundation and the American Enterprise Institute. He's a columnist for U.S. News and World Report, a former senior official at the Department of Homeland Security, and an honored graduate of The Ohio State University. Today, Matt is president of two organizations that deal in policy, issues management, public opinion, and other areas. Matt's been on with us several times, so it's a pleasure to welcome him back. Matt, glad to have you here again.
Hey, thanks for having me, Joe.
Absolutely. So I think, as I said in the opening, we're going to talk about a variety of subjects, but much of them have to do with government. So to help us get started, maybe share your views on what's the proper role of government in our daily lives.
Yeah, I mean, I think government should have a light touch in our daily lives, right? We should keep taxes as low as we can. We should keep regulations as low as few as possible in terms of health and safety is where we should focus them on. And government shouldn't do what the private sector or the nonprofit sector can do better. And that really tries to guide, those principles guide what we try to do on a day-to-day basis.
Why should that touch of government be, as you described it, light? What's the consequence if it isn't?
Well, the consequence, if it isn't, becomes increasing socialism, increasing big government that is costly, puts burdens on businesses and individuals to do the great things that they do, results in lower job growth. It takes more money out of the pocket of people from their kitchen table, so they can't decide what to do with it. Government does. And we become more and more dependent on government, and that is not the American way. We founded this country because we wanted to be free of government to the degree possible.
How would you gauge where we are on that scale between complete hands-off government on the one end and complete socialism on the other? Where do you see America today?
Well, I mean, I think unfortunately over the last 8 years, government at all levels has grown. And so we're closer to the socialism side than we are to the kind of laissez-faire, hands-off side. You know, from the moment you wake up, even while you're sleeping, to the moment you go to bed, you know, there's, you know, government is regulating or doing something that affects every little step you take along the way during the day. And there are things it doesn't need to be doing that we could probably call that back, reduce the amount of government in our lives, and let the free market and individuals do what they do best.
So to the extent that we do have to have governance, government, I'm assuming that you're one that believes the more local, the better.
Absolutely. I'm a big proponent of the concept of federalism. I want government as close to me as possible because that's where I have the greatest amount of accountability, transparency, and say, right? I can go into the meeting at the City Hall, at the Board of Education. A lot harder for me to come down to Columbus, even harder for me to go to Washington. So I think we got to keep government as close to the people as possible because that's where we get accountability and transparency at its best.
So you said we're kind of swinging left in your view of where on the political spectrum in America. Look back here to a couple of weeks ago when we elected a whole bunch of people in the state of Ohio, and there were some very important national elections that took place. So kind of pick and choose what stories you learned from the midterm elections of 2018.
A couple of things. I think one, we learned that Ohio is probably more of a red state than a battleground purple or blue state. The fact that in a year where the Democrats did well nationally in the House elections, Ohio was very strong, won all the statewide offices that mattered, and so that to me shows that we're more of a red state. Second, I think, you know, you look at the interesting difference between what happened in U.S. House races, where Democrats did quite well, compared to how they did in U.S. Senate races, where the Republicans actually gained seats in the U.S. House, which made it gave Mitch McConnell more power to put conservative judges on the benches to get through political appointees for President Trump and his administration. So it was an interesting dynamic where you had this two different worlds almost battling at the same time.
Yeah. What's the reasoning behind that? How can you go one way with when you're voting on your representatives and another way when you're voting on your senators?
Because I think what happened in the House races are two dynamics that were in play. The first dynamic was you had a whole lot of seats that Republicans had to defend that Hillary Clinton won at the presidential level in 2016. So those are going to be tough seats to win. Secondarily, I think you had a lot of folks who were awful scared to run for re-election, thinking that Trump was going to be such a disaster that they would get slaughtered. So they opted to retire instead. And Republicans had a whole lot of open seats to defend. And that made it really difficult when it came to winning the seats we needed to win.
So I'm going to throw out just one of my personal views, and I'm going to make half our listeners happy and half them unhappy with me. But it's been my contention that we have recently lost two speakers of the House because they got tired of all of the crap. I think that's why John Boehner decided to retire, and I think that's why Paul Ryan stepped down. You're nodding your head, yes, but maybe help me understand a little deeper than that, than I don't want to deal with this anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, it has to be one of the hardest jobs in the world to be Speaker of the House, whether you're the Democrats or the Republicans, because you are herding a lot of cats that have lots of their own opinions and thoughts. I mean, you know, Paul Ryan and before him, John Boehner, had to try to deal with all these individuals that have constituents, and you have districts that are very conservative to very moderate. And so there are people that have different issues because of that. And so doing that has to be incredibly difficult. And I think that's what whoever becomes Speaker of the House for the Democrats coming forward is going to have the same difficult, but on the left spectrum, where you're going to have extreme kind of liberal progressive socialists like the woman from New York who didn't seem to know much, but she talks a lot, all the way to
the three chambers of government, the presidency, the Senate, and the House.
And comparing the folks trying to get across the border down south to Jews fleeing Nazi Germany. I mean, just really silly stuff like that. But all the way to moderate Democrats that have to kind of live in a fairly kind of balanced district. So it's got to be one of the hardest jobs. I can't imagine doing it. I would never want to do it, and I wouldn't step up to do it if somebody begged me to.
So in Ohio, the Republicans won governor, attorney general, secretary of state, treasurer, and auditor, and Sherrod Brown won. Help me understand that dynamic, how you can dominate. And the legislature still remains highly Republican, the state house. How did Sherrod Brown pull it off?
Sherrod Brown pulled it off because Sherrod Brown is a very hardworking politician. That he rolls his sleeves up, he gets into the trenches. He's done a good job for his constituents across Ohio. That as you look at them, and he's actually fairly crafty in what are the things he does in Washington. And the third piece, which I think is a really important one, is you know there is very little light between Sherrod Brown and Donald Trump when it comes to trade, which right now is a big deal because of jobs in Ohio. And so when you think about, and farmers as well, right? So when you think about that, you know, if Trump is doing well, then Sherrod Brown probably is doing well. And ultimately, I think that's probably why he did, won by 6 points when he had way more money, spent a ton more money than Jim Renacci did, and theoretically should have had a much bigger victory given the amount of money he spent. But still, 6% is a 6% win.
So again, I mentioned we won the statewide offices, except on the Supreme Court, two Democrats were elected.
Yeah, that's a name issue, right? We have learned in Ohio, if you put certain names on the ballot, they do well because there's a history among statewide office holders with those names. And I think that's essentially the only thing that happened. Because again, remember, unlike the other races, you don't know if they're Republican or Democrat running in those offices. So it's kind of a blind thing that people just go by name.
And then one final political question here. The chances of this happening are slim and none, but as we sit here in November of 18, we have two Ohioans whose names are being kicked around as potential presidential candidates. Have you ever seen that before?
Well, you know, Ohio has a robust history when it comes to people that want to be president. Governor Kasich and Sherrod Brown aren't alone. I think the odds are far greater that Sherrod Brown could be on the presidential ticket in 2020 than John Kasich. I mean, John Kasich has no real avenue, right? He's never going to win a primary against Donald Trump. Donald Trump is way too popular among base Republican voters, and there is no independent path. I wrote a piece for U.S. News called Independent Illusions that focused on how the math works. Because remember, it's not a percentage vote issue. You have to actually get 270 electoral votes. really impossible to do as an independent candidate. So I think John Kasich is probably frustrated, can't find the avenue, not going to find the avenue. But Sherrod Brown could be a vice presidential nominee if the Democrats were potentially smart enough to do that.
Matt Maher is the president of Opportunity Ohio, where they talk a lot about policy, governance, and some defense issues, too, which are very important to all of us, and we'll be getting to those a little bit later in the show. Matt, I want to go to one of the books you have written. the title of it, unfortunately, I'm laughing a little bit, but I shouldn't be. Taxpayers Don't Stand a Chance. What's the premise there?
The premise is, sadly, in Ohio, it hasn't mattered who actually got elected, Republicans or Democrats. The reality is spending went up, taxes have gone up, jobs have been weak. And so at the end of the day, taxpayers, you know, don't stand a chance against what is kind of the establishment onslaught that is the right and the left, no matter who got elected.
So a couple of weeks ago, we did actually a two-part series with Bill Scuharty and Fran, Fran's last name, but they wrote a very comprehensive analysis of the Ohio economy and looked basically from the 1960s forward, assessed what some of our governors have done and such. And I know you've gotten into that too. So maybe give me your quick version of Ohio's economic history. Baseline the 60s when things were going pretty good.
Yeah, Ohio was one of those great beneficiaries of the post-World War II environment where, you know, Europe was decimated by the war, Japan was decimated by the war. And so Ohio is a very populous state, had a base of manufacturing, the auto industry. So we really had a great run up until about the mid-1970s when, you know, you then saw the rise of the rebirth of Europe, the rebirth of Japan, and then the introduction of global trade issues, right? So that's where Ohio then started to stagnate a bit. And what has happened is, over the course of time, Ohio, its political leaders didn't make the kind of visionary moves I think they needed to make for Ohio to be truly competitive today. And that has put Ohio in a position where we've had pretty weak job growth over the course of decades. We've seen a population stagnate. You know, our best and brightest are leaving for greener pastures in other states. We are aging faster than other states based upon the U.S. average. So we've got some real problems that we've got to try to solve here in the next kind of decade or two, or we're going to continue to lose population, which means, as you know, Joe, the Electoral College, right? We went from having a fairly high number of electoral votes, and we're declining every year, and we're going to lose another one after the next census. So if we can't get back on the growth curve, Ohio's in for some uglier times ahead.
60 seconds. You said a lack of political vision, systemic from across all governorships over the 60s to today. What's that mean, lack of vision?
Lack of vision, right? They didn't put in place the infrastructure to support a growing economy. I mean, we have Cincinnati, Cleveland, and Columbus are the, like, I think, 48th, 50th, and 51st busiest airports in America right now, but we're the seventh largest state. There's a disconnect there, right? We didn't build a hub system when the hub system was happening so that we could become like a Denver International Airport, where now Denver is booming. And that airport was, again, the visionary leaders in Colorado saw the need to put that airport where it is. And now you see the economic growth that comes with that. We haven't seen that in Ohio because it's a hard, you got to fly somewhere to get somewhere if you're doing business in Ohio, which is why we lose business.
Well, we're going to talk more about some ideas that Matt and his organization have in terms of ideas on improving the Ohio economy. We'll be back with Matt Maher right after this. Matt Maher is back on Town Hall, Ohio, a fairly frequent guest, and he is the president of Opportunity Ohio. I kind of stumbled through describing it at the top of the show. Let me hear it from you. What does Opportunity Ohio do?
Yeah, so Opportunity Ohio is a free market think tank. So we spend our time trying to put forth policies that we want government to adopt in our belief to make Ohio a stronger America, a stronger economy. So less government, lower taxes, less regulation, let the individual and businesses thrive and flourish. And how do we get there?
And how does one get paid to think?
That's good. We're a C3, so we're a charitable contribution funded entity through donors, individuals, and and foundations. We don't really get much from business, the business community, which is fine. But yeah, that's how we get funded, and then we do our work.
Well, as I look through some of your pieces of information on the website at Opportunity Ohio, you have some very specific items that you think we need to employ in Ohio to bring us back to greatness that perhaps may have dwindled somewhat over the last several decades. The first on your list is increasing economic freedom and competitiveness. In what way?
Look, the toughest battle Ohio needs to fight that the political class doesn't want to fight is making the private sector a right-to-work environment. Ohio is now the left flank that runs from Ohio all the way to Maine, and it's all unionized. There's no right-to-work capability in those states. We're now surrounded by Michigan, Indiana, Kentucky, except for Pennsylvania, West Virginia's as well. And that is creating a tough environment for all of those states, not just Ohio. If you look over at private sector job growth from 1990 forward, those are the laggard states. And if you look at what has happened in Indiana, Michigan, since they went to right to work, they're having stronger job growth than Ohio is. If we want to have a booming economy, which then keeps and attracts our best and brightest, keeps them here rather than lets them go elsewhere, we want to have the kind of job growth that is robust year after year, we're going to have to essentially fight that battle and win it in order for Ohio to be truly free.
And you don't think there's the political will?
I don't think there is, unfortunately. We're going to try.
A version of it got shot down a few years ago.
Yeah, for public sector, and that's because they put police and fire in there, public safety, and that you just can't beat those guys because of what they do. They put their life on the line, and nobody wants to see them put harm in the way. That was a mistake that was made here that wasn't made in Wisconsin where they did pass it. But private sector is what I'm focused on because, you know, when you think about it, and people always look at it, it's the right to work for less is what the unions love to say. The issue, if you talk to people who run companies, if you look at down south where there are unions, by the way, it is not about pay and benefits. It is about controlling your workspace. It is about saying, hey, we're slowing down on this line. We need you to do over this. Go here, help out and do that. Where you don't have a 1,000-page work rule that says, I'm going to file a grievance because that's not my job code, blah, blah, blah. Those things are what make America less competitive when we have them in place. And Ohio is one of the least competitive in that way. So we've got to free the employers to essentially do what they can do to make sure employees have jobs and can do the great things they do, as we saw Lordstown's now shutting down for GM as of yesterday, another unionized entity that's going down.
Well, you've just assured that I need to invite Tim Berge in to...
Tim will want his equal time.
And he will get it if he so wants. And another priority item for Opportunity Ohio and improving the Ohio economy, you call it providing a fair and level playing field.
Yeah. So look, this is not a sexy topic. And we put out a report 2 years ago called Reimagine Ohio. And one of the things we laid out is, wouldn't it be great if Governor Kasich spent the last 2 years of his term doing two critical things? Number one is launching an initiative that went from A to Z, every program, office, agency, and state government, and figured out what they did, why they're doing it, how much it cost, and what can be done differently or less or not at all. And I know we have the Common Sense Initiative, but that thing is, frankly, it's laughable compared to what you should be doing, which is that really comprehensive, behind-the-scenes, so slow slog that we do. Secondarily, at some point, Ohio is going to have to wrestle with the 3,700 taxing jurisdictions that it has. That's the third highest level in the country. If we can't figure out how to reduce the number of government jurisdictions in Ohio that are taxing people's income, their property, their sales, then we're not going to be competitive. And to do that, you need leadership from someone like a governor to say, we're going to get everybody in the room and we're going to bear down on this. If it takes months and months and months, we will, till we figure out how can we consolidate school districts, local governments in a way that doesn't take away school mascots and tradition, but reduces the number of overhead and taxes that are required to fund Ohio's government writ large.
Another item that you say is important is to promote job creation. You've touched on a couple of things that will impact that, but others that will create well-paying jobs in Ohio?
Yeah. So, right now the approach, as you know, for Ohio is to trust in this kind of opaque thing called Jobs Ohio, which, Jobs Ohio has been around now for 7 years, and the results until this year have been fairly anemic, if not horrific, where you had, 52,000 private sector jobs 3 years ago, 42,000 the year after that, and last year, just 30,000 net private sector jobs created. But for the Trump administration's tax reform and regulatory reforms, we wouldn't have the surge we're having this year. So that has rescued Ohio, but we can't keep hoping that we have smart policies coming out of Washington, because as they get dumb ones coming out of there all the time. we've got to do it here in Ohio. And so we've got to be smarter about not having a government entity or quasi-entity picking winners and losers. We've got to reduce the regulations on businesses and let our entrepreneurs and our business class do the great things they do, which is create jobs and prosperity across Ohio.
Matt Mayer is the president of Opportunity Ohio. If folks would like to learn more, Matt, where do they find you on the web?
www.opportunityohio.org.
We're going to follow up on some of Opportunity Ohio's ideas for the Ohio economy. We talked about job creation, and I kind of picture that largely as big manufacturing types of things. But you also talk about the importance of developing entrepreneurship. That's where we're going to go in just a couple of moments with Matt Mayer, president of Opportunity Ohio. We'll be back with more with Matt after this on Town Hall Ohio. Welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio. Our guest today is Matt Mayer, president of Opportunity Ohio, a think tank. And one of the things they focus on is the Ohio economy and bringing it back to its greatness of yesteryear. You talked a lot about job creation in our last segment, Matt, but I want to follow up a little bit on that. You seem to be a proponent not just of creating jobs through GM staying open or Amazon moving here, but entrepreneurship as a source of job growth too. In your mind, how does that look when it's working?
I think the way it works is you've got to get government to a point where the business class and entrepreneurs truly can create and do things and not always have to hit the government wall and hire lawyers or lobbyists or accountants or regulatory compliance people. And so for Ohio, and this is, I think, where, frankly, Governor Kasich has done a pretty good job by trying to kind of think about business differently. And Ohio needs to be the place where the young, best and brightest stay here after graduating. That's where our future jobs are going to be, right? The people that create those new companies that you and I aren't even thinking about because we're dinosaurs. Those folks, though, are leaving. They're going places elsewhere. If you look at the 88 counties, the growth is only in places like Franklin County, Collier Counties, and Cincinnati. The rest of the state, the counties are dying because people are leaving. So we need to make sure that we create an environment that is very conducive to people wanting to be here so that the creative class can do those amazing things that they do that, again, we can't even think about because, all we worry about is getting in our car, driving places, the basic technology stuff that we're used to and comfortable with.
I want to jump to a sort of an attached subject here. We talk about getting the government we deserve, and so at every 2 and 4 years, we get to make a big decision on where that government's coming from. But you write in some places about the challenges that political appointees bring to our governance. We don't elect them, but the men and women we elect hire them and appoint them. You see some potential problems for harm there. How?
Because, you get these people too often that have been strap hangers or have, they've been in this, dying to try to get a job with some governor or some president. And so not enough screening gets done. And when they get these jobs, they don't step back and say, I know what I can do, but what should I do? And oftentimes the should gets lost for the can. And, we've seen that here with the audit that just came out from Dave Yost's office, where David Hansen was clearly doing stuff he shouldn't have been doing, right, with the Department of Education. And that undermines our faith in government. That harms the direction we're trying to go. I saw it when I was with the Bush administration where, I remember I had colleagues who would call ahead to TSA when they would travel and they would get walk-arounds through the security so they didn't have to wait in line like every other American. And I traveled with somebody one day and they said, we called ahead to TSA, we're going to skip the line. I said, no. My friends and family have to wait in line. If a good buddy of mine who travels constantly and is complaining to me all the time about TSA lines has to stand in line, I'm standing in line. Those people, that mentality, we've got to purge from government because they end up harming the people they work for and ultimately the American people, and they undermine faith in government, and that's bad.
So whether these transgressions are improper or unwise, either way.
Just plain dumb.
Yeah. How do we prevent this short of just making sure that the people we elect have a proven track record of hiring good folks?
You know, I think you've got to create some type of entity within your administration, whether that's at the state level or the federal level, that is almost like its eternal watchdog for political appointees, that ensures that these folks, they know the rules, they know the concept of don't become the front page of the Dispatch or the front page of the Washington Post. All you're going to do is harm the person you work for, and that's not why you came here, right? We came here to serve the administration, serve the American people, serve Ohioans. Do your job and do it honorably, and make sure you never do something that you might be able to get away with, buying super expensive furniture, right? Flying first class because you're allowed to. Do it smart. Do what you would want somebody to do with your money rather than taking advantage of the system and the perks.
Matt Mayer is the president of Opportunity Ohio, and while much of our discussion thus far has been about politics and governance and economic issues, Matt also has some expertise in national security. How does one eventually become a high-ranking official at the Department of Homeland Security? What's that career path? How do you end up doing that?
Being dumb enough to raise your hand and say, yes, I'll serve. I was working for the governor of Colorado, got a call from the White House during the very early stages of the creation of the Department of Homeland Security. They asked me to come in and help get that thing up and running. So I went to Washington with my family. And spent 2.5 years there working for the secretary and the president, and just did sometimes it's hard for me to think about the number of things I did. This actually came up last night on Facebook with some friends about, you know, how'd you get kicked off of Air Force One with, you know, 1 hour left to go? And I had to retell a story that then brought up lots of other stories that I just had forgotten about. So, you know, you just kind of get blind luck and, you know, cream rises to the top. And I'm not saying I may be expired cream, but I'm the least expired cream that rose to the top when I was there.
So I want to talk more about this, but we've only got about a minute before break. The concept of, if I remember right, of Homeland Security was we've got all these different agencies, this alphabet soup. We want to bring them all under at least, if not one roof, at least one oversight system. Has it worked?
No, not really. And I've actually published an idea on how to restructure the whole thing to put things in their proper place. But the fundamental problem is it's too big of an entity, and it does too many things that one person can't possibly run it effectively.
We'll be back to talk more about some national security issues with Matt Mayer, president of Opportunity Ohio. The conversation continues right after this.
And how much am I responsible? Can I help things to change? I'm a member of this country. But what does that mean? And how much are you responsible? Help things to change. You're a member of this democracy. What does that mean?
Welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio. Our special guest, Matt Mayer, president of Opportunity Ohio. They get into a lot of things on governance and economic issues. And Matt also has quite a background in national security. Matt, an overly simplistic question in terms of national security. What do you worry about the most?
What I worry about the most are the homegrown folks who are hard for us to detect in that lone wolf. And we've seen some of that over the last few years. That's one primary concern. Another concern is, you know, we know that Hezbollah, you know, the proxy for Iran, has sleeper cells in the U.S. And so one of the things we often worry about is if those get activated, do we know where they all are? We know where some of them are, but are we watching them, and can we keep our finger on their bubble so that they don't get the chance to do some harm?
So give me a little bit of an assessment of how well, granted, we're not going to be able to know everything, but I get the impression we know a lot, but where are we overall in terms of our ability to track threats and prevent them?
So we've gotten really good at tracking threats that are overseas and stopping bad people from getting here by plane or boat, so to speak. Where we have some weaknesses is on the southern border, where it's too porous. And if you look, there's been reports out of Texas, the number of individuals that they've apprehended that are from countries of high concern, and those are not Central South American countries of high concern in the Middle East and elsewhere, that they're apprehending coming across the border, Bangladeshis, Somalis, that you kind of scratch your head, how are they getting there to get across the border? And we've had cases now where Somalis who have come across the border illegally have then been apprehended doing terrorist planning and plots. So that's a big concern for us because we don't know which ones we've missed. Those are the things where we're bad at. Where we're also bad at is making sure that when we have information, it may be a small piece of it on an individual here, that we do the thorough investigation. Too often, if you recall over the last, let's say, decade, too many of the domestic attacks that have occurred after law enforcement had some information about that individual, whether it was the FBI or local law enforcement, and not enough was done to follow up or make sure we kept those folks under surveillance so that they didn't get a chance to do what they ended up doing.
Is that a function of manpower and resources?
It is a function of manpower. I mean, when you think about it, everything has changed. It's hard to believe we can talk about 9/11 only 17 years ago, and so much has changed since then. But so much has changed because of technology. With encrypted capabilities now on everybody's smartphone, the terrorists have gotten very smart. And so much of what they do behind encrypted technology that we can't track. That makes it more important, that we invest in human intelligence, meaning we need more men and women who can go undercover, more surveillance, the types of stuff that Americans rightly are concerned about. And that's where we have to, that's the next fight we need to have, is how do we increase that human intelligence component domestically with making sure we're protecting civil liberties of Americans in their private lives.
I don't know if you get into studying much on cybersecurity. Tell me what we need to be watching there.
Well, cybersecurity, what we need to be watching there are all the bad guys, Iran, North Korea, Russia. They're capable of doing some really ugly things. And so hardening our infrastructure and being able to make sure we play offensive cybersecurity rather than defensive all the time is really important. And there's a lot of work being done in that regard, but we're behind the curve in some ways. So that's one that can be scary, because so much can be done. We're so all dependent now on microchips and technology that cybersecurity is really one of the paths of the future, the battles where we're going to fight the ugliest battles in the future potentially.
So how do you rectify a belief that we need to do a better job of policing the technology with one of your core beliefs that government should touch our lives as lightly as possible? Is there middle ground there where the technology leaders of the world can be doing things that assist our government that maybe we don't even know about?
There is a middle ground. And here's the deal, right? I'm not smart enough to know what that middle ground exactly is. But what I've proposed to in the past has been to create kind of a national commission like we did after 9/11 of folks from both sides of the aisle, really good thought leaders that come up with what's the balance between the increase in surveillance and human intelligence that we need married with protection of our civil liberties, because there is the balance that we can find, or a better balance than we have today. I mean, think about what we did. My son got, he's an 8-year-old, got screened by TSA for his hands. And as they're looking at my 8-year-old son, who is clearly not a terrorist, nothing about his past has terrorist nexus, what's getting through the security scanners? And that is I call that faux security, right? We make ourselves feel comfortable because we walk through these mags. But the fact of the matter is TSA misses 75% of component bomb parts every day. So it's crazy security. We need to put more money elsewhere.
Thanks for ruining any vacation plans I have by airplane. Matt Mayer is with us. He's the president of Opportunity Ohio. We'll be back to chat more with Matt right after this.
He's a very conservative man. Oh yes, he's a very conservative man.
So did I pick that right for you? Is that okay?
I was just saying, wow, what a wonderful song for you to greet me with. Thank you, Joe.
Matt Mayer is the president of Opportunity Ohio, our guest, and I think I can say this without offending Matt. He knows something about everything, and that's why
jack of all trades, master very little.
Yeah, that's why we have him on Town Hall Ohio to talk about a lot of different things. And as always, Matt, it's been fascinating. Maybe just to wrap up our final 5 minutes here, a couple of thoughts on some problems we have and potential solutions. Healthcare on everybody's mind. I think it doesn't matter what your political persuasion, you know, it costs too much and it needs to be fixed.
Yeah. So a couple things we need to do. One is, I think we need to get the power and money out of Washington and into the hands of governors. And that's primarily on Medicaid, right? The idea that Washington is telling governors across this country how to do that is silly. If governors had the authority to do what they want on Medicaid, design their own programs, and then spend the money accordingly, I think we get lots of innovation and better healthcare outcomes for the 27% of Ohioans that are on Medicaid. In the private sector, again, same, we have too many regulations. putting too many taxes on business. And we have this silly notion that's a post-World War II creation of our healthcare system. We've got to make it individuals-focused, not business-focused.
I want to ask you a little bit about energy. Our constituents at Ohio Farm Bureau, farmers, they're big energy users, always have been. They're evolving into energy producers, whether it's ethanol or a wind farm on some of their property. What do you see as the right direction for U.S. energy policy to go so that we save money and have a clean environment?
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to have kind of an all-of-the-above policy where it makes the most efficient sense, right? If wind makes the most sense in a certain place, then that's great. Natural gas does, then even better. But let's not pick winners and losers with subsidies. Let's get out of that business, right? And that's one of the mistakes Kasich made, I think, was attacking the energy entrepreneurs and farmers and landowners with the Utica and Marcellus shale find by trying to tax that process, and just because you wanted to shift taxes there. And I think that put a somewhat of a damper on our energy exploration and production here in Ohio, where we could have been doing a bit better than we are, and we're doing fine, but we've got to keep our taxes low on that so that way folks in the you know, eastern Ohio can benefit, but landowners, farmers, and the whole lot.
So we could do a whole show on this one, but what's the biggest problem facing our educational system and how do we fix that? 30 seconds, Matt.
Oh, boy.
No, not quite that fast, but quick.
Our biggest problem is what happens in those kids' lives from 4 p.m. to 8 a.m. every day. Too many kids are in broken families, too much TV, too much violence, not the right nutrition in their bodies, and they come to school not ready to learn. And that is step one. Step two becomes we have an education system in the major cities that does not work for the kids in those cities.
Why doesn't it work? What's the big problem?
Because we have the best and brightest teachers tend to be going to the suburbs, and we need to figure out a way to make sure we get the teachers that are going to the places where they're needed the most to help those kids. And we need to have a flexible system that isn't based upon, again, a 100-year-old system where they sit in desks all day and go through rote memory learning. Some kids don't learn that way. So we've got to have a flexible system that adjusts to the kids in the areas. And again, by getting it as local as possible, we can get that flexibility school district by school district, but even school to school rather than district by district. Columbus is a big district. I'd rather see those principals in each school have the ability to set their agenda rather than being told by the Columbus, you know, school board what to do.
Pension reform. I'm getting ready to retire here in about a year or
Congrats.
So, and hopefully my pension will be there. What do we need to be thinking about to make sure that not just mine, but everybody's pension is there when they're ready to retire?
Well, Phil, pensions are really a bygone era for the private sector. So public sector, we've got some problems in our pension systems because we've promised too much and we don't have the right rates of return. So they chased higher risk returns and then those aren't performing. So we've got to actually get folks shifted to the defined contribution system, not the defined benefit plan. Those are too hard. People are living longer, retiring too early. I'm hoping I live till I'm 9 years old. I shouldn't be retiring at age 65. I should have to work a little bit longer than that because, you know, I can. And that's a good thing, right? But we have people retiring at 55 who are then getting pensions for longer than they ever paid in. And that doesn't have economic sense written all over it. That has disaster written all over it.
You've gotten paid. Well, we're going to cover your parking. So that's the extent of your remuneration for today. But want to pitch a book? Anything that folks might want to grab a hold of if they go to Amazon or wherever?
Look, I've got all three of my books are on Amazon, and here's the deal. I don't make any money on any of the books that you buy. I donate 100% of all proceeds of the books I have written go to the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library. So I donate all the money that makes. And so go, you know, buy one of the books. One's on Homeland Security and Federalism. One's on Ohio Being a Mess. And the other is called The Founding Debate, which is really looking at where should the power of our lives reside, Washington or here? And you get to decide after you do the reading. But yeah, take a look at those books on Amazon and buy a couple, and money goes to a good cause.
Our thanks today for today's special guest, Matt Mayer, President of Opportunity Ohio.
Town Hall Ohio is a project of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation and is brought to you with the support of Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Join us again next week for Town Hall Ohio.